हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनोभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 74. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, actually, householders work very hard day and night, but all fatigue of the day's labor is minimized as soon as they meet, husband and wife together, and enjoy life in many ways. Lord Krishna wanted to exhibit himself as being like an ordinary householder, who delights himself by exchanging joking words with his wife. He therefore repeatedly requested Rukmini not to take those words very seriously. The BBT purport adds, the word Bhamini indicates an angry, passionate, temperamental woman. Since lovely Rukmini did not become angry despite all provocation, the Lord is still speaking fastidiously. Verses 32 to 48. Rukmini defeats Krishna's reasoning. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Queen Vaidarbhi was fully pacified by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understood that his words had been spoken in jest. Thus she gave up her fear that her husband would reject her. Smiling bashfully as she cast charming, affectionate glances upon the face of the Lord, the best of males, Rukmini spoke the following, O descendant of Bharata. Right, because here is that she understood it was a jest and all that, so there was nothing wrong, because the problem was that she was worried about losing that position of relationship with the Lord. So as soon as that was cleared, then she's comfortable like that. So she's not, as here mentioned here, Bhamini, the angry, passionate, temperamental woman, because if that was the case, that he had made the joke and it had upset her, that she would be dealing with. You understand? So this is then her mood. Sri Rukmini said, actually, what you have said is true, O lotus-eyed one. I am indeed unsuitable for the Almighty Personality of Godhead. What comparison is there between the Supreme Lord, who is master of the three primal deities and who delights in his own glory, and myself, a woman of mundane qualities whose feet are grasped by fools? Right, because he was saying is that you're in this great position, and I'm not so great, right? It's just these are my enemies, but these are great personalities and all that. And so, therefore, we're not equal. You know, you're supposed to marry equals, so we're not equal. He was presenting that she's so much greater, but she's turning it around and saying, yes, we're not equals. You're so much greater. And all these persons that are interested in her, they're just fools, right? So that's the whole thing. He's the great Supreme Personality of Godhead, and she is just a material woman who all these foolish guys are running after. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur comments, taking the same statements by which Krishna previously denigrated himself and praised Rukmini, Rukmini now gives an opposite meaning to those points. Krishna said, you should have accepted me. You should not have accepted me because we are not equal in qualities. Rukmini replies here, O lotus-eyed Lord, that is true. I can never be equal to you. You are the Supreme Lord endowed with six opulences, the controller of the three gunas, triadisha. And I am controlled by the three gunas. I am vastly inferior to you. It is not possible that I can be equal to you. Out of a feeling of great humility, Rukmini identified herself with the material energy, which is just a portion of her energy. Right? Because her expansion is the material energy, but then she's identifying with here out of humility, just saying, oh, I'm only this much. She's leaving out the internal potency aspect. Sri Rukmini continued, right? Because there's a non-difference, but there's a difference. Just like Krishna is spread everywhere through his energies, but at the same time, he's different. Right? Sri Rukmini continued, "Yes, my lord Urukrama, you lay down within the ocean as if afraid of the material modes. And thus, in pure consciousness, you appear within the heart as the supersoul. You are always battling against the foolish material senses. And indeed, even your servants reject the privilege of royal dominion, which leads to the blindness of ignorance." The BBT purport mentions. In text 12, Lord Krishna had said, "Raja bhyo bhibhyata shri bhu samudram sharanam gatan." Out of fear of the kings, we took shelter in the ocean. Here Srimati Rukmini Devi points out that the actual rulers of this world are the gunas, the material modes of nature, which impel all living beings to act. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura points out that because Lord Krishna fears that his devotees will come under the influence of the modes of nature and become entangled in sense gratification, he enters the internal ocean of their hearts, where he remains as the omniscient supersoul. Upalambana matram atma. Thus he protects his devotees. The word upalambana matram also indicates that the Lord is the object of meditation for his devotees. In text 12, Lord Krishna also said, "Balavabihi krita dveshan." We created enmity with the powerful. Here Srimati Rukmini Devi points out that it is the material senses which are actually powerful in this world. The Supreme Lord has taken up the battle against sense gratification on the part of his devotees, and thus he is constantly trying to help them in their struggle for spiritual purity. When the devotees become free of unwanted material habits, the Lord reveals himself to them, and then the eternal loving relationship between the Lord and his devotees becomes an irrevocable fact. So here, for the devotee who surrendered, then the Lord is there as Paramatma. He's helping the devotees control the senses. And then when that control becomes steady because of the desire to please the Lord, then the Lord reveals himself. Then one gets that taste for that interaction with the Lord. That moves one towards prema, right? In other words, there's two aspects that are always going on. One, we're purifying ourselves from the contamination of material endeavor. And two, we're developing that attraction for Krishna. Right? So, as our attraction to the material world is there, but we wish to give that up to serve Krishna, then that's the aspect that's focused upon. When that becomes steady, that we're fixed in not being deviated by things in the material world, then at that point Krishna starts to reveal himself, then we start to become attracted to him. Does that make sense? So that endeavor is there by the devotees. He has to try to make that endeavor to come to that position, and then Krishna will take care of it. Yes.
Can we say that it means that only after anarthani vritti is such that will happen?
Basically. But it's not that before that something's not having a value. We have to remember is that even a candle in, you know, an open field of darkness still gives light.
Yeah, but that's occasional.
But still, the point is that occasional is much greater than the constant benefits one gets from the material world. So it's still good. You know, it's like, you know, let's say if every couple of years you get a gold ornament, then it's okay. Yeah. You know, but we're just saying from there it gets better. You know how you say it? Yeah. Is that what I'm saying? So we have to make that endeavor. We have to try to situate ourselves in Krishna consciousness, being freed from the material entanglement to please Krishna. Right? If we're doing it because we think that that's just good on its own, the process will be slower because then you have to do it yourself. But if we're dependent upon the Lord, that by His grace only we can conquer that. It's not that, yes, I'm so austere, I will control my senses to see how powerful a yogi I am. Then we'll see, yes, how powerful a yogi are you? Right? But if it's a matter of we surrender to Krishna and we wish these to go away, then Baladeva will remove them. Right? So that's the whole aspect there. Then, Krishna can reveal himself, because in an impure heart, then one's not going to be attracted by Krishna. Right? To some degree we are. So we see directly with Krishna. We see the deity, we see different services, and then it works nicely. But in other aspects of our daily activities, then we're distracted by the material concept. Does that make sense? So, but we see from the position of these great devotees, there's nothing that doesn't remind them of Krishna. Right? Because the point is if we see an opportunity for sense gratification, then the general tendency is we lean towards taking that. Right? Does that make sense? But if it's a situation that's not sense gratification, like you're walking around Tulsi or something, there's not a whole lot you're going to gain there, you know, unless you're one of those, you know, marathon, you know, like you really love, you know, that just each step is there, you know, so then you might try to get some taste out of it. But otherwise, then, you know, you'll tend to think of it as spiritual. Mangalartik will be spiritual. Your job will be, you understand? So the direct activities you tend to see as spiritual. All indirect activities one will tend to see towards sense gratification. But one's determined to give up that mood, though one hasn't, but one wants to, then Krishna will help remove that. So that's why he in the heart, then he is helping with that. Right? Right? Krishna sitting in the heart, then he removes that ignorance. But it has to be because we want it to go. Does that make sense? So many things will go, but at the same time, we have to also want it to go. If we want everything to go. So that make sense?
Ultimately, Maharaj, we have to be inspired to practice the process.
Yes, so that's why we associate with devotees who are more advanced, because they're inspired. So seeing that, we become inspired. So that we apply. But yes.
As a general concept, we want our attachments and bad habits to go away.
Mm-hmm.
However, when it comes to specifics,
mm-hmm.
we're quite particular about that.
Mm.
Means we don't let certain things go.
Yes.
So how does it work?
Because the more we get purified, because we'll let the general go, right?
Yeah.
So when you have specific backed by a whole, supportive base of general, you know, material desire, then that specific desire becomes quite, comfortable, right? You know, it has the support, it has the, you know, backing, it becomes confident. But as the general go away, it doesn't have so much support, so then it's your attachment and then your intelligence. And so then after a while you start to see it's not, you know, you'll contemplate, and then with time you'll start to see it's not so important. So at that time it'll start to slowly go away. You know, and the more that we see it like that, in other words, the more it goes away a little bit, the more that we're able, the intelligence works better. And we're able to appreciate that and be determined in that. And then Krishna takes it away. In other words, the purification is happening because of Krishna. Not that we're purifying ourselves. No, we can be involved in the process of purification. But even that ability to be involved, that's by the Lord's grace. So the Lord's grace in the form of, you know, as the super soul, as the devotees, as the scriptures. So the process of work, that's why it takes time. But you can see as one can be steady at 75% that has been removed. So that 25% that's left, that's generally not going to be the kind of generic attachments. That's going to be the specifics. But one's more mature, and like that, one can analyze more, one can function more in a detached way, so then one's able to deal with these more major attachments, you know, more easily. So even though you're dealing with the more difficult ones, it's easier to deal with because of the greater advancement. So, and in the beginning, just general things are just going away because, you know, they're not that important, you know. So, does that make sense? You know, writing on a crocodile is not that important, so it kind of goes away and you don't even notice that it went, you know. Okay. So then he becomes, reveals himself, and then when he reveals himself, then the devotee becoming attached then this becomes established as an irrevocable fact. So that's the point. Once it comes to the point of prema, it's not going to be anything else. Right? So as you advance more, it becomes more and more established. So, in the same verse, Krishna stated, Tyakta Nripasanan, we renounce the royal throne. But here, Srimati Rukmini Devi points out that the position of political supremacy in this world usually implicates so-called powerful leaders in darkness and blindness. As the saying goes, power corrupts. Thus, even the Lord's loving servants tend to shy away from political intrigue and power politics. The Lord himself, being completely satisfied in his own spiritual bliss, would hardly be interested in occupying mundane political positions. Thus, Srimati Rukmini Devi correctly interprets the Lord's actions as evidence of a supreme transcendental nature. Right? Because he stated that when Jarasandha came for the 18th time, then he just, instead of fighting, he just ran away and established his fort at Dwarka. So went down there, built the place, and during the night then brought all the Mathura Vasis, so that they went to sleep in Mathura, they woke up in the morning in Dwarka. But that, you know, wouldn't be bad, right? You're stuffed into some little dinky apartment, you wake up in a palace in the morning. Yeah, it's not bad, right? So, yeah. So like that, then they... It worked out. So, he's pointing out is that, yes, so who's going to complain? Right? Who's going to criticize him? Right? Because the devotees aren't. The demons, the materialists. So yes, he gave up material sovereignty. And for what reason? To protect his devotees. Because they're there, then it's always this fight over material sovereignty. But you go out to Dwarka, there's no problem. So then he saves the devotees from having to be involved in all that political intrigue and everything. So then she points out, this shows his transcendental nature, how it's about the devotees, because he made Dwarka for the devotees. For his own self, he's not worried about the mundane. So people, mundane people think that he's not something special, that's fine. It doesn't matter to him. Sri Rukmini continued, your movements, inscrutable even for sages who relish the honey of your lotus feet, are certainly incomprehensible for human beings who behave like animals. Just as your activities are transcendental, O all-powerful Lord, so too are those of your followers. The BBT purport mentions, here Queen Rukmini replies to Lord Krishna's statement in text 13, O fine-browed lady, women are usually destined to suffer when they stay with men whose behavior is uncertain and who pursue a path not approved by society. In the present verse, Rukmini is taking the term aloka patam to mean unworldly path. Those who are entangled in worldly behavior are trying to enjoy this world more or less like animals. Even as such people are, quote-unquote, culturally advanced, they should simply be considered sophisticated or polished animals. Right? Because you have different varieties of animals that have different kinds of things that are going on. Right? You have animals that are just on their own, there's no structure like that. Then there's animals that live in herds. Then you see that there's animals that live in very, very structured society kinds of things. Like this. So it just becomes more and more, how they deal is more gentle or more refined. So you have all that. So it's not that the whatever finity is there is not there in the animal society. Right? It's all there. It's just that there is just seen in the context of just being that of the animals. But, yeah. Srimati Rukmini Devi points out that because the Lord's activities are always transcendental, they are us. Aspasta, or unclear, to ordinary people. And even the sages trying to know the Lord cannot perfectly understand these activities. Right? Because of their material attachments, they can't actually understand the activities of the Lord. Right? Only the devotees can understand, because as said before, the Lord reveals himself. But for the non-devotees, he doesn't reveal himself, so they can't understand. So therefore, it's unclear. Does it? Does that make sense? No? Take pasta, put it into clear water, boil it, what happens? It's a pasta, you can't see it. Yeah? She had something there.
I was thinking that in terms of Krishna's revealing himself, in every realm, he revealed himself in a particular form.
Mm-hmm.
But then within that realm, according to the sthayi bhava of individual, then he reveals that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also, it's many levels.
Yes, 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 many levels. Because even though seeing in Bhav Sadhana, there's the generic level and then there's the specific level. And then within that, there'll be more detail. So there's always going to be these things. Because Krishna being everything, then all these aspects are all part of him. So it's just how much. Point is anything that's revealed of the Lord is wonderful. And then you're just adding to that. Since he's unlimited, this process will go on unlimitedly. Is that? He's always expanding his glory, so that means more and more can be revealed at every moment. This for us is like Mataji said, it's occasional. But as we go, that occasional becomes more regular. Right? So when it comes to that regularness, that's when Krishna can reveal himself, because then you'll, as you are regularly situated, you'll regularly appreciate. Because if it's occasional, the point is Krishna is always there, but sometimes you appreciate, sometimes you don't. So that's the difficulty. He can reveal himself at those points, but you may not pay attention because, you understand? But when it's regular, then that means then as he reveals himself, you'll more appreciate. So therefore, only when you're in that mood of appreciation, you reveal. But because that's occasional, the process is slower. But as that becomes more regular, then the process speeds up. Does that make sense? Yeah.
The doubt might be is that Vrindavan pastimes in Bhagavatam are quite short and Dvaraka is much more by volume. And also it goes after Braj. So some devotees might consider that Dvaraka is more important because of that logic.
Means they can. If that's how it works, and what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? It means if someone wants that, then you can have it. You know, it's just like, let's say you go into the mall. Okay? What shops are near the door? Right? The not so fancy shops. Mm-hmm. Then you get into the really fancy shops. And then the door on the other side? So then one might from that think cheap shops are where it's at. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that that's just the way it works. You have the preliminaries, you have the main thing, and then you have the conclusion. So you're always going to have it like that. Even the tenth, you have the 9 cantos, then 10th canto, then 11th and 12th. You know, so even in 10th, then you have the pastimes there, then you have, you know, the Braj, then you have Dwarka. You know, and within Braj, then you have with the cowherd boys and the elder gopis and like all those pastimes. Then it comes into the younger gopis, and then it goes out from there. So you're always going to have that. Does that make sense? So everything always has a preliminary. It has the main thing, and it has the conclusion. You always have to have that. So if somebody wants something else, then fine. I'm like that. But if they, you know, want to take part in the pastimes in Vrindavan, then they have to appreciate that and see everything in connection with that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that you have to have one thing that you look at, and then from there you see everything else. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say somebody appreciates food. So whatever they're eating at any time in any place, they're looking at that aspect of it. You know, the nice taste or the different things, or they may look at it as association, so therefore you're eating something, you get someone else to eat, you know, to join you, or you join friends and then eat something. You know, in other words, the friendship, that will be the main thing of eating, or the taste of it will be of eating, or somebody will look at the health aspect, so, you know, if it tastes good, it shouldn't be in your diet, that kind of thing. You know, or there's those that are looking at, they don't, you know, no calories, they don't want to gain any weight, you know, if they don't look like Twiggy, then there's something wrong with them. You know, like that, so then they'll see all food like that. So in other words, there's some mood, and then from that you see everything else. So if we're interested in Vrindavan, then Vrindavan's the point, and all other aspects are seen in connection with that. So it's just whatever you want. In other words, it's not a bad thing if people like Dwarka. It's just a better thing if they like Braj. But if Dwarka is their place, then that's for them, it's perfect. You know, so for us, it's not a crusade or a campaign. It's just, this is being offered. You want it, you take it. You don't want it, haribo. It's going to go on anyway. So, yeah. Yes.
And Dwarka covers Vipralamba mood.
They have Vipralamba, but it's the point is that it has the element of Aishwarya. So you have the combination between sweetness and Aishwarya. That's the difference there. Because there is. Krishna goes from Dwarka, he goes to Hastinapur. And sometimes he stays for many months on end. And so I think when he was getting this Pandavas established and all that, he stayed quite a long time when they were establishing Indraprastha. I'm not sure, I think it was 9 months or something he stayed. You know, generally it'd be shorter time. You know, maximum 3-4 months because he'd come during the Chaturmasi or something. But this he stayed for 9 months. So they'll feel separation. So that's one of the reasons he goes back, because they'll be missing him and this and that. So separation is there. It just won't have the intensity that will in Braj. Does that make sense? Because if the intensity of separation becomes too great, they can always bring in the aspect of his grandeur, and then that will drop them out of their specific rasa into the generic rasa of servitorship. And so then, because that he's the Lord, he can do whatever he wants. Therefore, he has service that he's doing somewhere else, and so then they'll just see him in that relationship. So then the separation goes away. You understand? But Braj, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Whereas the 10 topics of Bhagavatam, and the 10th canto deals with the most important topic, that is shelter, ashray. So after that, this 11th and 12th cantos, what is the relevance for?
See, the point is it's not that the acharyas point out that you shouldn't try to take the cantos and try to establish them according to the 10 topics. That this canto is this topic, that canto. It may have a lot of that in it, but these 10 topics are throughout the whole Bhagavatam. So you might find more of one way or another, but it's not that it's not all there. You say shelter, but what about the summum bonum? Like Rukmini Devi here is talking about his position as the Supreme Lord. You know what I'm saying? So like that, and he doesn't establish everything properly. He's killing the demons, so that's not properly establishing everything. You know what I'm saying? So all these things are going on. These 10 topics are what Bhagavatam discusses. And so how they're discussed, which one's more prominent, at what time, then that's another thing. But just because one's prominent doesn't mean the others aren't there. So one should avoid trying to delineate these 10 topics by cantos. Okay, it'll be artificial. Sri Rukmini continued, "You possess nothing because there's nothing beyond you." Right? So I guess that's why his devotees then have nothing. Because he has nothing. He possesses nothing. Right? Because possessing means there's something other than you. But he is everything. So what's to possess?
But then the doubt, the more you possess, the more you possess Krishna, because everything is him.
As long as you see it that way, it can work. Yudhishthira Maharaj did quite well that way. Yes, but as pointed out before, then that the pride of the positions, then Krishna saves his devotees from that pride.
Yeah, but as long as you see everything as Krishna.
Without pride. You can't be proud that I'm seeing everything in relation to Krishna.
Pauper is proud of his penny also.
Yes, and so therefore Krishna works out that he doesn't have a penny. He loses his penny. That's why you have, what do you call it? You know, those grates, you know, in the side, you know, in the curb that have, you know, for the drain water goes in. Because if you drop your penny there, you can't get it back out, right? You know, so. Yeah, so all these things, it's all about, because Krishna, whatever his glories are, he's not proud of it, because it's just him. And so therefore, for the devotees, then also, it's expected they won't be proud. Otherwise, how do you interact with them? Because it's qualities, it's not quantity. So that quality of not being proud, not being not having anything, not identifying this as ours. We see it identified as Krishna. So it's just like, let's say, the head pujari. Now, how much paraphernalia and clothes and that do they have that they're working with? Right, a huge amount. But it's not theirs. So that's how it's devotional service. So if we see, we can have however much we have, as long as it's all being engaged in and we're seeing it in relationship to Krishna's service. Right, so yes, you can have everything, but then that's the point. Yes, so that's there. So as long as one has a need for these facilities and things, that sense of ownership, then we're trying to see that it's connected with Krishna in some way or another, like that. But when we come to the point where we don't require it, then it's just a matter if it's useful in service, we have it, and if it's not useful, we don't have it. Right? For Yudhishthira Maharaj, as long as it's useful, he has a whole kingdom. You know, that means kingdom here means an empire. He, you know, he's the emperor. But as soon as it's not of importance to devotional service, it's given up. So that's the whole position, is that it's not whether one has things or not, it's how much one identifies with it or claims ownership of those things. That's where the problem is. So if that's going to distract one from devotional service, then one may end up with a bit less. Right? And if it won't distract one for service and it's used in service, then one may have so much. Is that, yes?
We've seen some devotees, they are very expert in engaging everything 100% in Krishna's service. Mm. However, they have that sense of possessiveness, and it's very common as well. So, how does it match?
It's just a matter of, it doesn't technically match, but the point is that if one sees it in relation to Krishna, as one using it for Krishna, then with time one will get purified. And then that sense of possession of the things will go away. Because the point is, it's supposed to be possession of connected of Krishna, not of the things connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It means the things connected to Krishna, as long as it's seen in connection to Krishna, then that sense of possession is all right. But when it's seen as it's yours also, you know, and there's some benefits other than the connection to Krishna, then there's a problem. So it's just a matter of the mentality changing. The situation doesn't need to change. Does that make sense? So in other words, situations, if one is Krishna conscious in a situation, there's no need to change it. But if by being in that situation you can't be Krishna conscious, then there's generally a need to change the situation. Right? And even if you can function in that situation nicely, then there's always the example to others who have a problem. So in other words, if you can function with it, then how much easier it is to function without it. Right? But those who can't function without it, then they need example in both, how to function with and without. Does that make sense? So the example is set by those who can do both, for those who can't do either.
Can we choose?
You can try. You can bargain. All right, super soul. Yes. Yeah. Is that okay? Okay.
This example, what you are telling, like in case of Bali Maharaj, one time she surrenders to Lord and he again doesn't come back of possessing.
He doesn't come back of possessing.
Means once he surrenders everything to Lord and from there he is. Like, but in our life, sometimes it is always shifting back and forth. Like how.
It means it's just a matter of we surrender. To that degree that we surrender, Krishna can reciprocate. So, if we partially surrender, then that will be the reciprocation. But the point is any surrender is of value. It's just the reason that we'll point out a aspect of mixed surrender as a fault is only because full surrender will give so much more happiness to the living entity and to Krishna. Right? So that's the fault, is because it's not at a position that it could be. You know, like let's say, for example, you have a very intelligent child, okay? And in the class that they're in, they're way more intelligent than anyone there, okay? Now, everyone there, they do their best and they get a C, okay? He then puts in some effort and gets a B. He's the best of the class, but he could have got an A. So is that all right? No. So that's the whole point, is that the soul can fully surrender and be situated in pure devotional service. So if he's not, he's not getting the full benefit. So that's why the fault is pointed out. Otherwise, anything connected to Krishna is glorious. So the fault we're pointing out is simply because it will not please Krishna or the living entity. Right? Because if you maintain illusion, then what's the whole point? Is that makes sense? Yeah. No one will be satisfied. Sri Rukmini continued. You possess nothing because there is nothing beyond you. Even the great enjoyers of tribute, Brahma and other demigods, pay tribute to you. Those who are blinded by their wealth and absorbed in gratifying their senses do not recognize you in the form of death. But to the gods, the enjoyers of tribute, you are the most dear as they are to you. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. This verse, she replies to the statement that he is niskinchana, poverty stricken. You are niskinchana in the sense that nothing is greater than you. Or, you are niskinchana in the sense that you do not have small quantities of power, sweetness, fame, strength, knowledge, and vairagya. Possess all of these in full. Here, sweetness and beauty are put together. The meaning of niskinchana as poverty stricken does not apply to you at all, because those, Brahma and other demigods, who are worshipped by all others, worship you. Right? So, those who have everything, they're worshipping the Lord, so that means he can't be poverty stricken. Right? Because all the potencies and everything that everyone has come from Krishna. So he has all opulences. So, yeah. She replies to a statement that wealthy men do not worship him by saying, Those materialistic men, blinded by wealth, whose very life is their money, do not know you, who is the punisher, death. What to speak of their worshipping you? They don't know Krishna at all. They don't understand. They have all this money, and it'll be removed at some point. It'll be lost. They don't see that. So therefore, then, what's the how, why would there be a problem that of them not worshipping Krishna is because they don't have the interest or the ability. But those who are Niskinchana, because he said he's only worshipped, appreciated by beggars. Right? But these beggars are ones who are, one, surrendered to Krishna, so begging for that mercy of the Lord, but also they materially are not interested. And so being not interested, they may appear to be externally having no opulence, though they have Krishna, so they have all opulence. I favor those who have nothing. She replies to the statement by taking the meaning, you are dear to those who have nothing. Since you are the dear most of Brahma and other mixed devotees, what to speak of devotees without material desire, Niskinchana? So the great sages, the great Paramahamsas, then they're all surrendered to the Lord. So they're the best of those surrendered. Those who desire nothing except worship of the Lord, who have no desire to acquire other things, who have no desire to know other things, are called Niskinchana by the wise. They don't want to know things other than Krishna. They don't want to have things other than Krishna. So, in other words, if it's not connected to Krishna, they're not interested. So this idea of that sometimes, it means we haven't had it for a while. But if you remember before, it was a very common thing in the class. People would ask questions. And if you ask them why you're asking this question, it's just, oh, it's something interesting to know. It has nothing to do with the topic being discussed. It's just a point of interest. So that's the meaning of wanting to know things other than Krishna, because it's not seen in connection to Krishna. It's just something interesting. Right? So if it doesn't have a connection to Krishna, why know it? So one can study anything if you see it in connection to Krishna, but if you don't, why bother? That's the whole point. There has to be some, just this idea is no, but you gain more knowledge, you enrich you, this and that, all these things. They sound really good, but for what purpose? Right? Because the more things you know, the more fun it is to speak to you, because you have more of an eclectic kind of background. Then you can speak on all different things. It's much more interesting. Otherwise, it gets really boring, right? You sit down in two chairs, and you have some tea. How exciting is the tea, right? And how exciting is the chair? So therefore, you have to have something to talk about. So it's either got to be some really juicy gossip or some really kind of new kind of angles on or new knowledge and all this kind of thing, right? So therefore, then that's why it's important to have these things, right? And if you didn't have these things, the intellectuals that have nothing to do, and then intellectuals, you know, how you say, that don't have anything to do, they're a lot of trouble, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why you don't see things other than Krishna. And having things other than Krishna, you see we become proud. They become proud of their knowledge. They become proud of their possessions. They become proud of their position and power. You know, their beauty. All these different things, they become proud. And because of that, then they can't see Krishna. Right? They think that they'll be rich forever or powerful forever or beautiful forever or famous forever, and but it doesn't work like that. Right? Hence the term a has-been. You know this term? Has-been means they were something once, now they aren't anymore. But of course it's better than it never was. Yes. No? Still not getting anywhere? Okay. Moving on. Sri Rukmini continued, you are the embodiment of all human goals and are yourself the final aim of life. Desiring to attain you, O powerful Lord, intelligent persons abandon everything else. It is they who are worthy of your association, not men and women absorbed in the pleasure and grief resulting from their mutual lust. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, it is well known that you are deeply endowed with all the purusharthas and also with bhakti, because you are the end result, bliss. Right? Because the purusharthas are supposed to give you bliss. He is the embodiment of bliss. So how do you have bliss? You have all the things that give bliss, right? But the point is he is all those things that give bliss. That's the point. So he doesn't even possess them. He is them. So, yeah. You are the cause of bliss for some and the very form of direct bliss for some. They all obtain bliss from you. Or you give results, right? Meaning that's the whole, because you get bliss from results. You are the means to the results and the result. So the method to get the result and the result itself and the bliss that comes from that result, that's all Krishna. There isn't anything else. And before that, to have the knowledge and skills that you can apply and all that, that's all Krishna. So when we say the method's Krishna, that includes all that. The knowledge, the skills, and the endeavor. That's all Krishna. Then implying that, you get a result, which is Krishna. And then the experience from that, the bliss, that's also Krishna. So there's Krishna's everything. Right? You are the means to the result and the result. Thus the intelligent give up all other means. So all other means that you don't see anything without that vision. Right? Because everything being Krishna already. But if you're doing it without knowing it's Krishna, then you're not getting the spiritual benefit. Right? It's not the actual engagement. But when you do these things connected to Krishna, see them connected to Krishna, then you get that spiritual benefit. Then you get that spiritual taste, right? The bliss. Otherwise, these other things, the bliss is, you know, heard about, or it's in the past. It's momentary. There's moments. Right? You know, so how's your life been? Have you been happy? You know, someone will say, yeah, I've had my moments. You know, and that's considered pretty, you know, yeah, very standard. This person knows how to speak. You know? So that's the point. It's just moments. So the intelligent give up those kind of endeavors and only endeavor what's connected to Krishna. Because that gives constant bliss. Why? Because it gives pleasure to Krishna.
That is like connection to Krishna as a person.
Connection to Krishna as a person, yes. I mean, other forms you connect, you'll get some benefit. But you won't get as much as to Krishna as a person. Yes.
If I understand correctly, the constant endeavor in Krishna consciousness gives constant bliss in Krishna consciousness. There's an idea amongst devotees that some endeavor in Krishna consciousness will bring you into eternal bliss in Krishna consciousness. Where's this bewilderment comes from?
The same concept that I'm going to invest nothing. I'm going to invest $1, and I'm going to win $100 million. No, but I'm just saying that idea that I can get something for nothing, you know, or I'm going to get. How you say? So it's coming up. 9th now, the 14th, I'll get some roses, and then eternally I will reap the benefits. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Okay. Means the example doesn't make sense, or?
Well, the concept doesn't make sense.
So you never fall into that trap. You know that for everything, all the reciprocations that are there, it's that constant endeavor in that way, so therefore that way then there's the reciprocations are constant. You never fall into the trap of thinking, I do one thing and then everybody will be happy forever.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Yeah. So it just comes from that, is that the living entity, naturally, their position is that of is bliss. Eternity, bliss, knowledge. So that for them is the natural position. But that position can only be had in the spiritual world, in devotional service. But it doesn't mean that it's not inherently the nature of the soul. So when the soul is in the material world, they fall under the illusions that everything's eternal and everything is happiness. Right? I can gain happiness in the material world and the material world's eternal. So these two illusions then drive people that, yes, I'll do some and I'll always be happy. But what's not understood is that there's a little thing in between. It's the endeavor. Right? You know, we just see these two. Does that make sense? Because endeavor is I take the knowledge and skills I have, and from application I get the results of happiness. So we might sometimes finesse the middle part. Right? So that, you know, it's like a credit card. You know, we finesse the middle that we have to have the money to pay for it. We just, you know, I have the card, I have the goods. Yeah, you know. So this illusion then is, we see is, those who understand that they make great profit out of this. You know. So it's just there. So what we understand is that Krishna is the means and he's the results. The means that results come from endeavor. They can't not be like that. This idea of that I will do anything and it will get. But Abhideya means that which is connected to the Lord, that which gives the Lord. So if you're performing an activity that's not connected to the Lord, how then you'll get the Lord from that? So those activities that are connected to the Lord, then it's connected. But when you're not connected to the Lord, how are you going to be connected? Or another example, like you have your toaster. If it's plugged in, it works. If it's not plugged in, it doesn't work. So you can't say that I plugged it in once. Yeah, you know, when we were at our old apartment, I plugged it in over there. So why isn't it working now? Yeah.
So the next step in following that logic, we're trying to connect constantly.
Right.
But once we connect it, means on the prema level, then we can relax actually at that level because we constantly connect. The connection is there and it's eternity.
Okay. But what's the basis of relax? Relaxment.
Relaxment means we don't have to endeavor anymore because we're already
there. And so, yes. And so, therefore, what's the basis of our, you know, how you say, philosophical position?
Mind.
Yeah, it means that it'll be ignorance. Because ignorance is doing nothing. So we can see it's a material concept, because material energy doesn't do anything. It's the Lord's energy empowering it that something happens. Otherwise, dead matter does nothing. So that's why it's said that the whole material Mahatattva is based in ignorance. Because we don't know our relationship with the Lord. Then you have the three modes controlling that. So this is just ignorance, meaning not knowing the Lord. Then you have the modes themselves that then push and make everything work. Right? So the point is that prema means where you're always committed to activities to please the Lord. So there's no question of relaxing because there's no desire to relax or need to relax because that absorption in the Lord's service, that's the real relaxed state. So in other words, if you're not fully surrendered, if you're not on the platform of prema, we are uptight. But there, it's the natural position, so one's totally relaxed. Is that... Thus the intelligent give up all other means. Means knowledge, skills, and endeavor that aren't connected to Krishna, they give those up. Or the result of the four vargas is bhakti or prema. You're the soul of prema. Right? So the... that all the different endeavors that are there, that you can get, results that you can get, that all of those, if they're seen in connection with Krishna, give you Krishna, because that's their whole purpose. So people who see those not connected to Krishna, they're the ones then who have problems. Does that make sense?
Because the vargas, they are being considered as material, no? And
the vargas, yes.
Yeah, but then you will see that the result is also bhakti or prema, if in connection to Krishna. But
it means
general understanding of devotees is that this materialistic concept, and we should not go for the four vargas.
Means that you're seeing, if there, it means, let's say you are performing, you're acting in your natural position as servant of Krishna and rendering service. Is that devotional service? Is that material? Okay. And all results from your endeavor you see in connection to Krishna.
Yes.
And that Krishna's, the endeavors you're making, the results you're getting, then are about favorable pleasure to Krishna, sensual pleasure to Krishna.
Yes.
And that you're never acting in any way on the material platform, you're always acting on the transcendental platform in all your activities to serve Krishna.
No, that is also bhakti. But
so that's the four vargas.
Yeah, agreed. But usually, you know, when we are practicing, usually it is not even seen in that way, because we keep on oscillating, you know, from one end to the other, like sometimes devotion.
Yes.
Sometimes
so, but I'm saying, well, what's the point here? You know what I'm saying? Is that, yes, people will see like that, but that's called materialistic mentality, or if they're devotees, then a mixed devotional service. You know, karma yoga, jnana yoga, you know, like this, but in the mixed aspect.
Okay.
So what's the question from that? It means, yes, that is the platform. But the point is the, as it says, thus the intelligent, they give this up. So I don't practice dharma, artha, karma, and moksha because of the benefit I'll get, but because of the benefit it'll get for Krishna. So if I see it in that way, it's just bhakti. It's only when I'm performing these activities that are naturally activities of bhakti without Krishna, then they're called material, then they're called dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. Right? If I'm performing dharma, I'm performing the activities according to my nature to please Krishna, I can call it sanatana dharma, but I wouldn't call it dharma. But when I want to perform these activities of my nature for my own benefit, that's when I call it dharma. You understand? When it's the result of that dharma, that endeavor, is for Krishna, I don't call it artha. But when it's for myself, I call it artha. And when the result is for Krishna, that he'll be pleased by this, then it's called bhakti. And if not, it's called kama. But it's for myself, it's sense gratification. And if I'm acting on the spiritual platform, because it's only the transcendental platform in which Krishna is pleased, because he's transcendental, therefore, then that's just being situated spiritually. But if it's not seen in connection to Krishna, it's for the benefit I'll get from that platform, it's called moksha. So the intelligent give up seeing it separate from Krishna. So it's not that they give up endeavor. They give up any endeavor that's not connected to Krishna, any knowledge that's not. If the knowledge is connected to Krishna, we could say it's transcendental knowledge. If it's not connected to Krishna, then we'll say it's material knowledge, or vidya. So the sages give that up. So just that it's knowledge or endeavor, and the knowledge and endeavor gives results, that's not enough. That's just mundane. But when the knowledge, endeavor, and results for Krishna, then that's considered devotional. So they only see it in that way. So to that degree that we're dovetailing it, you know, that to that degree we're getting the spiritual benefit. If it's that I like this activity or this branch of knowledge, or the combination of the two, I like these results, but I'm willing to connect it to Krishna, that's renunciation. But to that degree, when that renunciation is complete, it's just about Krishna. Then it's called sannyas. Right? So we're trying to get... So when it was talking about those who are niskinchana, that means sannyas. It's that mentality. Yeah? Okay. Then, okay, you are the soul of prema, right? Because that's the main thing. That's why those who are the transcendentalists, the platform of prema, that's why it's so attractive, because Krishna is the soul of prema, right? He's the Vishaya.
Mm-hmm.
Just by desiring you, they give up everything. What to speak of giving up everything on attaining you? They become indifferent to everything related to the body, to wealth, to life in this world and the next, and to liberation. Since it is all trifling, giving suffering, they have everything since you are dear to them. Right? So it's seeing these things separate from Krishna. Right? So the body separate from Krishna, then it's a problem. That's given up. You only see it in relationship to Krishna. Wealth is seen only in relation to Krishna, not separate. Life is seen in relation to Krishna. Liberation is seen in connection with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that we see it connected, that's always good. That's the start, and that's glorious. But when we come to only seeing it that way, that's then the best position. Right? Yeah.
You see, devotees, they want to aspire for that point.
Yes.
But on the way, because of the mental speculation, they do aropya bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
And in this way, they claim that this is the real devotional service, which...
It is the real, and that is the real path of devotional service, or it's real sadhana bhakti, but they can't claim it's prema.
They don't do that.
Yes, so therefore... Only pure devotional service will give you prema. Mixed devotional service will give you liberation. That means moving in the same direction. But the point is until you give up that attachment, you can't move to prema. So you can get to bhava, but to move to prema, you have to give up that attachment to things other than Krishna. So when one's attachment to Krishna is complete, that's samadhi. Right? And if it's only occasional or regular or, you know, quite steady, it's not enough. Does that make sense? Yeah. So yes, it is the bona fide process, but don't never claim that it's pure devotional service. Right. That's the point, because it has to be free from karma and jnana. So karma and jnana means seeing knowledge and activities and results separate from Krishna. That's what's karma and jnana. If you see it always in connection with Krishna, that's bhakti. So pure devotional service means you only see it as bhakti. You never see it as material. So you can't see it as material and claim that's the same as pure devotional service. But to say that it is a better position than what the materialists are doing, that's definite. Because it is progressive. One is moving it's rightly situated. One is moving towards Krishna. It is glorious. But one should know that within glorious that there are levels. Just like there's Dwarka is perfect, Mathura is more perfect, Vrindavan is most perfect. So, yes, it is perfect. But it's not more perfect, and it's not most perfect. Does that make sense? So that's why one has to be able to analyze, to understand is, yes, we're here, we're situated, this is what I can do for now, and so therefore for me, this is the perfect situation. But at the same time as I am always still analyzing what is the actual standard. Right? Because that's why you have the Shruti, Smriti, and the authority. Right? And then based on that, then I'm seeing what works for me at the present. So I'm analyzing and seeing, yes, this is how I can be situated. Right? And seeing that how I am situated, then I'm engaging. But we always have to be careful that because what I'm doing, that's perfect for the world. No, that's perfect for me, not for the world.
I would say from this discussion that usually the neophytes, they're very narrow-minded. Because
yes.
they cannot see the general application and wider application of
yes.
the same principles.
Yes, yes. So the Madhyama, that's broad-minded. Like that. Right. So that's then the position. That's why it's used. Because you have to make it... See, the Madhyama platform can be related to by the neophyte. The Uttama platform technically can't be related to by the neophyte. Because they don't have any need to be involved in anything of this world, so then they don't have to function here. So as a Paramahamsa, that they don't get involved, then what will we do? You know what I'm saying? He's just like, okay, Haridas Thakur is in Benipal. He's there. He's chanting through his 3 lakhs of names. The prostitute comes. He just says, yes, yes, nice, sit down. And, you know, like that, I have to finish my rounds. And then for 3 days, hearing him chanting the holy name. Then she becomes purified. Then she's sitting down there at the same place and chanting. Okay? Because she came to that Uttama platform. Now, if we just go there, get ourselves a little grass hut, put a tulsi like this, and sit down and chant 3 lakhs of names, it's not guaranteed how long we'll last.
If somebody comes.
Yeah, it comes along. And so then we just have to know that there are levels and know what is our level. If due to false ego, our level has to be the best level, then that will be a problem. It will cause problem for ourselves and anybody else that we insist that our position is the best. And so that's then the point, because pure devotional service, that's the best. And everything else is in support of or in pursuance of. But if we say, no, this is it, then it's not in pursuit of pure devotional service anymore. That's when it becomes an annoyance, a disturbance. But as long as one may have attachments, one's endeavoring for pure devotional service, though you don't have it, that's progressive. That's never disturbing to anybody. But does that make sense? Because we're still progressing. But the other one, we say, no, this is it. That means you've reached the end. That's the prayojana. So how is pure devotional service or prema prayojana anymore? So therefore, then there's no. You know what I'm saying? Or it may be, yes, when we're in the temple and chanting, we're progressing because we see their prema as the goal. But when we're outside the temple in our own day-to-day life, then we see what we're doing as the goal. You know, that's the end. So then we won't progress. So then it's dependent upon how much we're engaged in the direct activities in the temple. Then those activities, those will bring you forward. And gradually you start to see the fallacy in one's indirect devotional service. Is that what it is? Yeah. Yes?
Maharaj, we engage a lot of in analytical study of the scriptures.
Right.
Using, trying to connect everything to Krishna. You know, Sankarshan Pradyumna, Aniruddha, then Vasudev. But then some devotees, they say, we don't need all that. We see Gopal, Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan everywhere.
If you see, then great.
But there's a doubt whether they see it or not.
you can tell by what's the mood, what's the attitude, what's the fragrance.
But the question is whether it is possible without following this analysis.
It is. But the point is generally the explanation is you may not see it this life because they've already done it previously. But the point is bhakti is independent, so it's not dependent upon jnana. So it's not the knowledge of these things that gives you bhakti. It's the endeavor to understand these things in connection to Krishna, that Krishna being pleased then reveals himself. So it's only the bhakti aspect of that endeavor that gives bhakti. That you have the knowledge, that's not it. Because it's the endeavor. So someone may have very little knowledge and have greater realization, and someone has more knowledge, but because of their pride in that, they have less realization. And if you have attachment, you automatically have this knowledge. Like the gopis, they have attachment to Krishna. They were not great scholars and yogis and, you know, how you say, renunciates. But because of their attachment to Krishna, all this kind of knowledge, practical knowledge, applied knowledge, or vigyan, they have. If you have vigyan, you can explain the gyan. So because of their attachment to Krishna, then they have realization of all these. So they can see Krishna in everything. But it comes from their attachment to Krishna. So yes, the aspect of rag, you desire it strong enough, then yes, it can work. But the point is since this is given as the process, otherwise, if it really is not necessary, then did the acharyas waste their time writing all these commentaries? Like we see, there's one verse, right? It takes 1, 2, 3, 4 lines. But Sanatana Goswami, well, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, means if you count the little n, then 20 lines he wrote on a four-line verse. So are they wasting their time? Right? So they're not, because this knowledge will help you surrender to Krishna. But it's not that it's knowledge that you surrender. It's because it's about Krishna and our associating with Krishna in the association of devotees. That's what gives us Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. That's what we're trying to come to. So it looks, so the secondary is never the point. It's what's the primary. But the secondary is required as the medium to express the primary. Because the primary is a mood. Is that affection? Right? So you express the affection through something. And then that affection is appreciated more. That's why it's considered that the four higher rasas are greater than Shanta. Because in Shanta, technically, there's no expression. Right? If that appreciation is there, but there's not something done to increase it. You know, not dynamically. And naturally, because it's devotional service that increases. So that's the position.
Isn't the knowledge given by acharyas itself bhakti, because it's the association of pure devotees?
Yes. But that's the point. It's not the knowledge itself, it's the association of devotees that's important. So in that, knowledge will be there. Knowledge is used as the secondary point for the primary aspect of that association.
Right? Yes. Here, Rukmini is saying about desiring you to give up everything.
Yes.
In this, Ambarish Maharaj, how he engages everything, that there is this, it gets translated desiring for you, desiring for Krishna.
Yes. So the point is desire is not the problem. It's what you desire. So if you see the desire connected to Krishna, then it becomes useful. But if the desire is seen not connected to Krishna, then it's a problem.
Like desiring Krishna and desiring for Krishna, are they same or different? Or?
Means if you desire Krishna, what do you desire Krishna for? What are you going to do? Put him in a locket, hang him around your neck, put him on your shelf, and you know, like that. You know, say, take a picture, a selfie with you and Krishna on the shelf, and put on Instagram, and my Krishna on my shelf. What are you going to do with this Krishna of yours?
Not clear. Desiring you.
But what are you going to do with this you once you get it?
Sir.
Yes, so therefore, then the two are not contradictory. He's the means, he's the result. He is the knowledge, he is the existence. So you have Krishna, you have everything. You don't have Krishna, then you basically have nothing. Now, we're not talking about the nothing of the... means you have nothing in the material. But the ones we're talking about here, that those who have nothing, then they are absorbed in Krishna. They have everything spiritual, nothing material. And these others have nothing spiritual and nothing material. So that's bad. You know? It's like the gross materialist with nothing. It's sad. Yeah.
So everybody's
Niskanchana,
one way or the other.
Yeah, everyone's Niskanchana one way or the other. But some have desire and some don't. That's why you see, the lifestyle of the Shudra, the lifestyle of the Brahmin is the same. They both have nothing. But the difference is the Brahmin's doing that on purpose and he's comfortable with that, while the Shudra is really trying to be like the king. So that's the difference. She answers verse 15. Yes. Marriage and friendship are proper between two people who are equal in terms of their wealth, birth, influence, physical appearance, and capacity for good progeny. End quote. O Krishna, pervading everywhere, Vibho, O Lord of the universe, you are suitable for them, since you have no desire for wealth. You are similar to them. Complete Lord, Vibho, you have no need for wealth. Right? So being everywhere and being complete, that's then the same. Vibho means has both meanings. Right? Does that make sense? So the impersonalists, they just take the everywhere part. But the point is, if he's everywhere, it means he's complete, because everything's him. You have no need for wealth. Though they have given up everything in worshipping with various desires, you respond by giving them results. Thus you are suitable for them completely. Samuchitaha. So they see everything connection to Krishna, so they use everything connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So we see is that sarvam kalvidam brahma, then you have they just see him pervading everywhere as one way of understanding. The other way is that he is everything. It's all connected to him. You see him by seeing everything. Whatever there is, you see, it reminds you of Krishna because it's something that can be done and connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So this aspect of sarvam kalvidam brahma, the gopis have the highest realization of that, which is that personal aspect of Krishna's Bhagavan in as Vrindavan as the lover of the gopis. And then the lowest will be just that they see everything's Brahman. And then you have the Maya bodies who don't even have that understanding. They just talk about it. Right? So at one end you have the gopis, the other end you have Sukadeva Goswami. Right? And below that, you have the Maya bodies. Right? Does that make sense? Well, it's only out of respect for their following of Vedic culture and renunciation that we call them impersonalists. Technically, they're not. They're Buddhists. Just they dress like those from the Vedic culture. And, Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.